I'm glad you all could find the room. It took us a while. Jack and I practiced for a couple of days. It was one of our quality improvement activities we got here. We have nothing to disclose, no financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation over the past 12 months, maybe 13 months or so we did. But yeah, none of that. Okay. Oh, by the way, everybody in the right place, developing and implementing a successful workforce development plan? Okay. Very good. I'm Ron Bialik, President of the Public Health Foundation. Jack Moran is our Senior Quality Advisor, and Jack has been doing quality improvement work for
a thousand years.
Came from private industry, and has we recruited him into public health to translate what's been done in private industry and healthcare for us in public health. And Jack's been with us for how many years now? 5 years, doing just great work with us at the Public Health Foundation. Who are we? The Public Health Foundation, we are a nonprofit. We've been around for 40 plus years, and we focus on quality improvement, performance management, and workforce development. And if you think about it, those elements together will help us improve the public's health by strengthening the quality and performance of public health practice, which is our mission. So that's a word from my sponsor. So what are we going to be talking about this afternoon? And again, thank you for showing up. We're going to talk about the importance of a successful workforce development plan, and I'm delighted to see a number of individuals from public health training centers, because I know a number of the public health training centers are out there helping organizations improve their workforce and also helping health departments with public health accreditation, and so this should fit quite well. For those of you who are not with a governmental public health agency, the idea of having a workforce development plan applies to you as well. Frankly, it applies to an academic institution as well. Having a workforce development plan to develop the workforce within the organizations where we work is critical for the success of our organization and for accomplishing our mission. You're right, Kathleen, we don't have one within the Public Health Foundation. Minor detail. We're going to talk about the workforce development plan in relationship, again, to Public Health Accreditation Board standards and measures, but also how you can meet those standards as well as exceed those standards. So we're looking at, you know, FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board, has some good standards to help really any organization with their workforce development plan, but also sometimes you need a little bit more than what's in the standards. So we'll talk about that. And we will introduce and discuss the Workforce Development Plan worksheet. Hopefully you've all picked that up now. If you don't have it, on the chairs over there, we have both the core competencies for public health professionals that we'll be talking about, as well as the Workforce Development Plan worksheet. We're going to be using a T-Matrix, a quality improvement tool, to talk about that. And again, the sign-up sheet that's going around, if you wish to receive this electronically as well as the write-up from the session, please sign up. For those of you who don't want to do any work and just want Jack and me to do the work, you're out of luck for this session. We are going to have you all do some work. See, somebody's leaving right away. Sit down, come on. So we are going to have an exercise, not jumping jacks. I mean, maybe that'll be good by the time we get there, but we're going to break you up into groups and have you do a little bit of work on your own, and then we'll talk about next steps and resources around workforce development plans. All right? Still think you're in the right place? All right, good, good. So why have a workforce development plan? Well, first off, for any organization, you want to be sure that you have the adequate numbers of people and the people in the right seats on the right bus, going in the right direction. Some people use that terminology. So you want to have adequate numbers, so your workforce development plan helps you with that. You also want to have training and systems in place to assure that you're building and continuing to build the skills and competence of the workforce. Training is one approach to building skills and competence and helping improve performance, but also systems can help you and that as well. So it's not only training. So it could be data systems, it could be processes within your organization, etc. Your workforce development plan also should deal with skills and competence. understanding the skills and the competency of your workforce and how to address any gaps that you see and prioritize, and retention. That's another part of your workforce development plan. So how do we retain the workers? And I didn't put recruitment in there, but of course recruitment is part of that as well. So those are some key reasons for having a workforce development plan. In addition, if you are a public health agency and you wish to become accredited, it's a requirement. So FAB has given a little bit of an extra oomph, if you will, to organizations developing workforce development plans. Most importantly, is having a workforce development plan can help your organization best serve the people it's meant to serve. Again, having the workforce, and you think about all of our organizations, the workforce is the key element to us being able to provide the services that we need to be providing to the communities that we serve. So, what makes for a successful workforce development plan? Hello, there's some handouts over there. There isn't science to this list. This is a list that's based on some experience and discussions with people in the field. So these are elements of a successful workforce development plan. You want to assess the current state. So where are we? Where are we within our organization? What does our organization look like with regard to our workforce? You want to identify the gaps and the needs of the organization. So we've identified where we are. We looked at the skills and the competence. We see some gaps. We see some needs. You can't address all gaps and needs at one time, so then you have to prioritize. Always a key part of your workforce development plan. And then once it is that you've determined the skills and competencies and the types of activities that you're going to prioritize and focus on, think about what's the future state. Where do we want to be? What do we want the future to look like within our organization? Select the strategies for your workforce development. So you have your priorities, now your strategies to move forward. Identify challenges and resistance. So before you can move forward with your individual strategies, you need to think about the feasibility. Are there challenges? Is there potential resistance before we can actually move forward? Then the feasibility of the strategies, you need to examine that. Develop sound implementation processes. So once you've identified the strategies, once you've looked at the resistance and potential barriers and re-examined the strategies and determined that they're feasible, then move to developing sound implementation processes. And once you have the sound implementation processes, think about cost, because again, you can't necessarily move forward without identifying the cost, human cost, dollar cost, potentially political cost. And then last but not least, assure the quality and process improvement throughout implementation. And what we mean by that is we all have developed plans in our careers that we either may put on a shelf and not come back to, or we may stick to it regardless of how well it's working, or we develop a plan and we check in 2 years or 1 year down the road, how well are we doing? What we're suggesting here is with your workforce development plan that you have a quality improvement process so that along the way you're examining continuously where you are and how well you're doing so you can make adjustments if you need to make adjustments to improve it. Okay? Well, last year at APHA, we dealt with the first three pieces of this. We had an exercise where we had people broken into groups to look at how they would assess the current state, how they would assess the skills and competence of the workforce. We had the groups identify gaps and then prioritize. We published that, well, we didn't publish it. We put it on our website. Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, Jack, doing a white paper to look at this. So if you're interested, these slides, we understand, will eventually be up on the APHA site and people can access them, and the URLs are live in the presentation, so you should be able to get to them. So this is up there now. So again, that's what we did last year. I should mention that we're fortunate to have Bill Keck with us, who is the chair of the Council on Linkages. So thank you, Bill, for joining us today. And the Council on Linkages is the author of the Core Competencies for Public Health Professionals, for those of you who may not be aware of that. And Kathleen Amos, who is the project manager for the Council on Linkages. So we're delighted that you both could be with us. And Bill, can you continue and finish the presentation for us? So back to last year. So last year we asked the groups, we did it at APHA and NACHO and NALBA meeting, National Association of County and City Health Officials, National Association of Local Board of Health meeting. And so we had a prioritization process. So the organizations who were in the room, the individuals, identified gaps and then thought about priorities. And as you can see here, financial planning and management and leadership and systems thinking were two of the key core competency domains that the individuals last year felt were priorities. Now you notice basic science skills was low on the priorities. Why was that? Well, part of the prioritization process within any workforce development plan is thinking about the current environment and your future environment. And the thinking of the groups last year was, well, you know, we can have all the public health science in the world within our agency, but if we no longer have a funded and supported agency, what good is it? And so the groups prioritized and said we really need to be looking at the financial planning and management and leadership and systems piece. And if you think about it, that if we were to ask the same question today, I think it might also tease out this way. So while the gaps were identified in all domains, core competency domains, the prioritization process had what bubbled up was what the organizations needed to be dealing with at that point in time. So now back to today's discussion, which is developing a successful workforce development plan, one that can really help your organization. So what we did was we looked at relevant Public Health Accreditation Board standards. And what I said earlier was whether you're a health department or not, these standards can help you as an organization to develop your own workforce development plan. So first, FAB has in it, look at relationships between academia and your public health agency. So there's a standard that deals with that. In addition, assess and develop workforce competencies. And FAB specifically refers to the core competencies for public health professionals. It doesn't say you have to use them. It suggests that you may wish to look at those and use those. And then address the competency gaps. Also look at leadership and management activities. There's a FAB standard specific to that. If you're anybody with a state health department in the room? Okay. That's right. Anybody with a local? You're both state and local. District of Columbia. State health departments are required to provide assistance to tribal and local health departments, so you're required to provide assistance to yourselves in D.C., right? And then there's another standard. There's FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board standards, there's 12 domains. Domain 11 deals with some of the management and administrative issues within a health department. Within that, there are suggestions about use or standards around using IT to support the mission of the organization and the workforce of the organization. So that might be something also to build into your workforce development plan is how you may use IT to help your organization. A number of health departments have either their own learning management systems or work with us at the Public Health Foundation with Train as a learning management system. How might you build that into your workforce development plan? How might you build in some IT that some of the university partners you may be working with can help you out? And then also FAB talks about job descriptions. And the suggestion, while not explicit within the standards, the suggestion is you may look at competency-related job descriptions. So if FAB requires you to have sound job descriptions, it probably makes sense to look at the core competencies and build them into your job descriptions. And then also FAB has a piece on recruitment and retention. So how is your health department addressing recruitment and retention needs? The workforce development plan requirement is in FAB domain 8. But as you can see, we go beyond domain 8 here in looking at the standards. So your workforce development plan is not limited to what's in that domain. And in fact, here are some that we have in our worksheet, but there are others, other FAB standards that you may want to build into your workforce development plan, like schedule of training for surge capacity. Unfortunately, that's an issue we're dealing with in the East at the moment, right? So what's the type of training that's needed. How do you build that into your workforce development plan? Training in laws to support public health interventions, social, cultural, and linguistic factors training. So all of these, depending upon your needs within your health department or your public health organization, can be built into your workforce development plan. So while we have on this worksheet that we developed some standards that we feel should be in all of the workforce development plans, there are others that may be more appropriate for you. One that we had a discussion recently in the Maryland Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, where health reform is front and center there. Well, if you're developing a workforce development plan, how is it that your workforce may be changing or may need to change as you're dealing with forming accountable care organizations, as you're dealing with electronic health records, as you're dealing with navigator roles and other activities that health departments maybe were not doing in the past? Again, your workforce development plan can take into consideration the changes that are occurring in the environment and in the practice of public health. So again, we're looking at how to meet and exceed FAF standards for your organization. This is the list we had up there before. And we're going to deal with, you know, determining desired future state all the way through to the assuring quality process today. The workforce development plan worksheet that you have in front of you, hopefully everybody has it at this point. If not, again, it's on the chairs. You now know why we handed it out, because there's no way you possibly could see it on the screen. And also it's something we're going to wish for you to refer to as well. This is built on what's called a T-matrix, and Jack is going to talk about that in a moment. One last comment I'll make before turning it over to Jack is that within the Public Health Accreditation Board standards under Domain 9 is a requirement that a health department engage in at least two quality improvement projects. One that could be programmatic and one that could be administrative. Now think for a moment. If you're developing a workforce development plan and you use quality improvement practices like a T-matrix, like what we're talking about here, that can actually serve as one of your quality improvement projects that you have to demonstrate that you've done. So you actually could deal with two important pieces of the Public Health Accreditation Board at one time: developing your workforce development plan and engaging in a quality improvement project. So I just thought I would throw that out there. And we have checked with the Public Health Accreditation Board that that's totally legit. All right, because they want to see you do practical things with your quality improvement activities, and applying QI to workforce development is an ideal and practical activity. Jack.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about this matrix diagram. And a number of years ago, a long time ago, I came across matrix diagrams. And it was a great day in my life. I know what you're thinking was, I really need the light. You know, that was one of the greatest days of my life. But what the matrix diagram helps you do is to think through comparisons. You know, you can think about them in your mind, but one of the simplest ones is what we call an L-shaped matrix, where you might have two factors. And you want to compare them to each other. So under A, there may be a number of subsets, you know, A1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, and the same thing with B. So you have all of these places where you can go in and do some comparisons and see how they work. And you can, one of the nice things today is with Excel or with Word, in these boxes, you can capture a lot of data. You can use a wraparound text. And then you don't have to go hunt for it. Of looking for things, you know, somebody asked you a question on this box, you know, strength or relationship, how did you get it? Well, you can capture the discussion. It could be in there. You click on it, lots of boxes, and you get all the data in there. So it's a good way to store things and document. And then what happens with the matrix diagrams a lot of times is you may want to compare, as we're going to do here, you know, this can be one factor A, and you might want to compare it to another one, B and C. So you have all these, you know, sub-factors that you can look at. And you can compare A to C and A to B, but you can't compare B and C. So you could go back and take another matrix, take this matrix and take B and C and put them in an L-shaped matrix and compare it. Now, say you have a fourth factor that comes in, D. Well, what you could do over here, put D in, and then it just becomes, instead of a T-shape, So you can compare D now to A and C. So it's just a way to continue to build it. Now, sometimes you want to compare A, B, and C. And there's another matrix called the Y chain matrix. It looks like this. So you can type them all the way down and not be happy with me again across the wall. So you can compare A and B, A and C, B and C. And then for those of you that really are good at drawing, you can take this matrix and you can make a T shape out of it, and somewhere in here in the third dimension, there could be a dot where A, B, and C compared to each other. I'm not that good at drawing things like that. But you find it a lot of times is that in here, what you find is that, you know, making comparisons and data, we really want to begin to think about, you know, you'll see in our example, you know, this is the FAB standard. This is how we might go about using it in our workforce development. A couple of factors that we want to look at. And the big thing about the matrices is it gives us, you know, relationships between the variables. We can talk about strength, roles played by individuals. We can put measurements in there. Anything that we want to expand the matrix. And these are the various ones I talked about, the LPXYC roof-shaped matrix. And roof-shaped matrices, just put a roof on top of one of the matrices. And again, you realize how many groups of data you want to compare, and then you can pick the right one of these matrices. And, you know, I talked about the L-shape, it's just two things together. So three groups of data, A, B, and C. You can compare A to C, but you can't do B and C together. So there are some limitations. So this is the one we're talking about, you know, the FAB measures. We're going to talk on your worksheet, the implementation process, and there's some steps we've come up with. And the other thing we found a lot of times people are doing this is they run into some challenges and some resistance. So you see in our process, you know, we do a little bit of this side, and then we stop, and then we go over and do this side to talk about challenges and resistance before we jump back and really try to do it the whole thing out, because we want to really make sure, you know, we're working on the right things that we have real success with. And this one will just give you an example. Ron has a book here. We have a new book out which is, talks about the Quality Improvement Encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. And it has all of the matrices in here. This is an example from it. You know, if you had a lab which you were working in and you had tasks like lab management, equipment training, maintenance, and repair, and you had some personnel, well, you could use this matrix to compare, you know, like in this case, you know, Joy has low skills in lab management, medium skills in equipment training, and by the maintenance repair, again, low skills, but you find a couple of the other people have high skills. And underneath this, you could have, if you click on this, you could type it in with the wraparound text, you could have the reasons why you've rated it low skills. So it gives you a way to think about this person. Now, we could add another dimension to this. I think that was the other way before, but last time we did it, it was turned this way. Anyway, so don't ask me why. That was this morning. Let's say, in the East Coast, it's 5 o'clock, 5:30, so this is probably right now. So anyway, here's the lab manager. Now you have some devices that people are going to use in their equipment. And we can look at now, you know, Joy on the devices. And she has high expertise in device 3, medium, and those. And we can begin to think about, you know, how would we assign people now in this organization? It's just a way to separate out the data. So again, we got, you know, personnel, these people. We can look at them in terms of equipment, knowledge, and as well as tasks in this case. And this is the one we're going to be working with. We're talking about the FAB measures down the middle, and then the challenges and resistance on the left side, and the implementation process on the other side. So again, really what we're trying to do is determine the relationships among the elements. Again, you can use these, as Ryan showed you earlier, last year we used this as a prioritization matrix, where we had people go through and rate all the different things and then develop a score. So it can help you rate, prioritize tasks or issues, and then try to identify the connecting points that happen in these things. So if you have a large group of ideas, you can whittle them down so that you can see which are the key elements you want to work on as you're going forward. So as we walk through our matrix, again, what we found is that when we were thinking about this last year, is we have the FAB activities. And in this case, you know, this is domain 8, but you could put in any one of the FAB domains. You could put in, you know, any types of measures or activities in there. And then what you think about it, this is sort of a generic implementation process. And one of the first things we found before people start doing anything, you want them to think about what's the purpose of doing this. Not just accreditation, but what's really the purpose of establishing relationship with academia or address, you know, competency gaps. There's got to be a purpose for doing this other than we get a check mark. You know, there's got to be some detail to it. Then once we have the purpose, we want to talk about what to do. You know, what do we need to do? Sort of in broad terms. And then we want to think about how to do it. What's the resources we're going to need? Then once we have that, we can start to break down the tasks, the timeline, responsibility, documentation, since we're doing accreditation. And the other thing at the last end we want to think about, as Ron showed earlier in the presentation, are the FAB standards. You know, so even though this one may be to 8.1, other FAB standards may be impacted. So you want to get as much credit as you can. And then we thought on the other side was, what's the common resistance you can run into? Well, one thing may be if unions, if you're changing, you know, job requirements, you're putting in things differently, new competencies. Well, you may, if you have a union, some may not, some may, you may have to negotiate. You know, we're going to rate people on these new competencies now. You may have to do something with that. You might have budgets, you know, might be some problems there that we don't have enough money to train everybody. We'll have to spread it out. Again, you might have an older workforce, and change may be something they don't like. You know, I've been doing this for 20 years. Why do I want to change now? So change is a difficult thing. And for anybody, and I was telling the group this morning, I just went through a traumatic change. A couple of weeks ago, my wife and I got a new car, and we switched garages because the new car fit better in the other garage than the other side. And for a couple of nights, I drove home, pulled up to the old garage, pushed the button. This door went up and down while I was screaming at this door, like, what's wrong with this stupid thing? Why isn't it going up and down? And my wife was at the other door, putting mine up and down at the same time. So it takes a while, you know, to make change in this case. And then you got to think about capacity and people get trained. External resources we may need to bring into it. One of the other things that came up back a while ago when we were talking about this, is there any legal issues as we're doing this that we need to think about? Other issues. The idea in this case is think about resistance before you start doing a whole lot of work. And that's why in this process we broke this matrix up into the first step. Figure out the purpose, what to do, and how to do it. Broad terms. Don't do anything yet. And you can see this is that step on your worksheet. So again, break it out. Just go that far. Then what we want you to do is go on to the other side and think about the resistance. And down here, you can see we have totals. You know, so we have the resistance, you know, 0 doesn't relate, 1 is minimal, 5 is moderate, 10 is major. Now, to help us out in this process, use those numbers. You know, there's no 7 on there. You know, this morning we had somebody had a 7. You know, 1 is minimal, 5 is moderate, 10 is major. And what we wanted you to do is think about, you know, for each one of these steps as we're coming down, where are we going to hit the resistance? And then you can total it up, and you can see maybe budget is a major resistance. Maybe external resources is one of the ones we want to think about. And then you can work on the pieces of the puzzle that have the least resistance to start with and start making change in the other ones. So as we said in this case, you know, go this do this side, and then pause. Check it. What kind of resistance am I up against? What kind of challenges? Before I start trying to roll it all out, let's reduce the resistance and the challenges. Then what we can do is in step 4, is we can start to think about, now that we're ready to go, where's the place we can get quick wins on first, and then figure out the tasks, the timelines, the responsibility. Get those done, and in the meantime, we can be working on some of these other major challenges and resistance so that people start to be able to move into those areas as we reduce the resistance, but we're still moving ahead as we go forward. And I think you'll find as you go through these 4 steps, you know, these first 3, think about what you want to do,
now where am I going to come up against roadblocks, landmines, potholes, whatever? And then, once you can see those, then think about where you can get the best bang for the buck quickly before you go too far. And if you fill that right side out fully, and then you start and you run into all of this resistance over here, it'll derail a lot of effort. So we found this is a good planning model as you go forward. And Ron's going to put you into some groups and talk about the exercise we're going to do. But one of the things that I'd like you to do in each group is, if you could, have one person that takes notes and fills in the form. And if you could, give it back to me, because I'm going to make a draft of the paper that Kathleen's going to finish, and I want to make sure she gets some really good data. I've learned to hand out quickly. And
they'll break in kneecaps this year.
And if you could do that, if you want it back, just put your email address on it. I'll scan it in and send it back to you when I get back to the East Coast on Friday, if there is any East Coast left. You know, I'll try to see what that looks like. And we'll send it back to you. Then we get the white paper, because we want to look at, we have NATRO and the NALBO data, and we want to look at the APH data and then see how it all relates together. And then we're going to have some really good filled-in examples. So when you see the worksheets, that will really help you move forward in the process. So if you could do that, one person take notes. And again, 0, 1, 5, 10. Those are the only numbers.
Thank you, Jack. And before, there are a couple of examples we're going to talk about for a moment before breaking you up into groups, but a couple of other points I wanted to make. One is, Jack had mentioned, you know, you can add other FAST standards here that you may wish to examine. That's one of the reasons to provide you with an electronic copy of this, because if you have an electronic form, you can keep adding, you can expand out the cells, etc. You can add other FAST standards, but you can also add other things that may be, again, relevant to your organization, like some of the health reform issues. Likewise, we don't have every type of issue up here. There may be issues that we've not identified in our, you know, little bit of brainstorming that may be important to you. For instance, when we were out in the, actually Kathleen and I were out in the Maryland Health Department last week, and they said, what about HR, our HR office or department? And in Maryland, the Human Resources Department is separate from the Health Department, and they said, shouldn't that be one of these columns? Absolutely. If that's one of the areas that may be influential in their workforce development plan activities, yes, put it up there. But at the same time, we don't want to see 100 activities out here, because then you're spending all your time thinking about and talking about resistance and not really necessarily moving your plan forward. Because we can always find reasons to not do things, so that's not the intent. The intent is to bubble up and talk about some of the major items. All right? So a couple of examples. One is dealing with assessing health department workforce competencies and gaps, and the other is relationships with academia and others. As I mentioned earlier, last year we worked with organizations at APHA around assessing health department workforce competencies and gaps, or assessing organizational competencies and gaps. And so on this one, let's say you were starting this, and the very first piece here is purpose. Well, what's the purpose? Why would you want to assess health department workforce competencies and gaps? Now, one of the purpose responses could be because it's required. That's not the purpose. I mean, that is a purpose. But we'd like to know, for your organization, why is this something that's important to do? And, you know, some responses that we would hear back is that we want to know what our people are skilled in so that we can have the right people do the right types of work and to build skills and confidence where we don't have it. So that's our purpose. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to work with our public health training center to help us figure out where the gaps may be. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to call them up. We're going to talk about where we are. And we're going to see if maybe they can survey us or help us facilitate a process with leadership in the organization and others in the organization to tease out the skills and competence. So you may say, okay, we'd like to do this and we'd like to work with our public health training center. Stop. Next thing is challenges and resistance. Could be, in this one, there are no union issues. Could be in this one, maybe there's a budget issue. Maybe the public health training center doesn't have the resources. Maybe you don't have the resources to do this. Maybe you do. Change may or may not be an issue. So again, you could examine what some of these may be. An issue could be that having an outside group maybe has legal implications. I don't know. But in this particular example, it's again thinking about having a how are we going to go about assessing the workforce competencies, understanding why you're doing it, how you're going to do it, examine resistance, and then let's say you get to the point you realize, you know what? Not a whole lot of resistance or challenges, period, with this one. And so then the next piece would be, let's look at the tasks, timelines, etc. So who's going to be responsible for contacting the Public Health Training Center? When are they going to do it? Etc. So on that, you know, relatively simple example, but just wanted to demonstrate A, that you can work with a partner, doesn't have to be only internal, and B, just examining the process. Now I'll take one a little bit more specific, since I already started talking about an academic relationship with a public health agency. Another one of the FAB standards, again, establish relationships with academia and others. Well, in this one, why would you want to do that? Why would you, in your public health agency, want to have an academic relationship? Well, it may help you train in the priority areas that you've identified. Working, you know, you may not have trainers within your organization, or you may have trainers, but they are doing 150% out in the field. So working with an academic partner may help you with the training. Assist with research. You may not have researchers in your organization. Many academic institutions do. Build staff research skills and competencies. So working side by side with some of the researchers may in fact help you build some of the skills and competencies in research methods. And then mentor students for future recruitment. All right, so you may end up serving as a placement site for students. They come to your organization, they get a good experience, they learn from you, and maybe you recruit them afterwards when they graduate. So you've defined now a variety of purposes. Why do this? Now what to do? Well, you'd say to accomplish all of this, because we'd like to have academics involved in research, training, and practice. We'd like to do all of that. So you've decided what you want to do is you'd like to form an academic health department between your organization and a university. Something near and dear to us, it's a Council on Linkages activity. We have the Academic Health Department Learning Community. Bill Keck actually has had one of the very best academic health departments with the Akron Health Department working. I mean, you guys are working just totally together. Okay, mostly totally together. So you've decided now the purposes, you see a good reason to do this. You'd like to form an academic health department. How are you going to go about doing this? Become a member of the Academic Health Department Learning Community. Okay, through the Council on Linkages, we have an Academic Health Department Learning Community. And so you may say, I don't really know how to do this, so I'd like to learn from my colleagues. I'd like to be mentored a little bit. I'd like to be part of a group that can help me with this. So you define the purpose, the what to do, and how to do. And then again, you could go through the process of looking at challenges and resistance, and then you could look at how you'd actually move that forward. So we're going to do an exercise. Any questions before we move forward? Yes.
Half of an academic health department in place, it would be easier to keep moving in that direction.
You can tell that we're at an APHA annual meeting because this came up this morning as well. Didn't come up during the NALVO meeting, didn't come up again around the NACHO meeting. So it's the positive attitude, and I was starting to think about that, Jack and I are going to have to talk to Sue, but for instance, external resources. We have it up there as challenges and resistance, but it's possible that there may be external resources that are a positive. It's not a challenge or resistance, but it's a facilitator. And I, you know, it's something we can talk about. You have any thought? Can that be built in? Sure.
Do it on the other side?
Okay. So, you know, this morning somebody said, well, if you took these numbers and you made these negative numbers, and so if there was a positive, you make them a positive number, so that was not something else that was suggested. So we'll talk about that. But no, you're not making it necessarily more complicated. I think looking at the opportunities is a good way to do it as well. Often, though, the opportunity is going to help facilitate you moving forward, and some of the opportunities may come out when you're starting to work with the tasks. What's key with this is recognizing that if you have challenges, major challenges in resistance, no matter what the opportunities are, you may not be able to move forward. So the key is, again, going back and forth and figuring out that maybe your strategies have lots of resistance. You may need to modify the strategies before you move forward. Other questions? Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to ask half of you to address the issue of integrating competencies into job insertions, and the other half we're going to ask you to address recruitment and retention measures. So two different FAB standards. And what we're going to do, I'll take a right number. Counting is one of four companies. What we're going to do is we're going to break you up. What I'd like to do is suggest that, let's see how many goes. From here forward, if you all could address integrating core competencies into job description. So that's going to require a little bit of rearranging chairs, or maybe you guys can move up and come closer to these folks here. Okay, so from this row forward, deal with integrating competencies into job descriptions. For these two rows, can I have you work on the same thing? Integrating competencies into job descriptions. Or would you prefer to do recruitment retention? I'll give you the choice. From experience, the integrating the competencies is a little bit quicker. Okay? And then this group back here, I'm going to ask you to do recruitment retention. You got a tough job. All right, so you can turn your chairs around. So what we'd like you to do is, you'll notice on one side, we have purpose, what to do, and how to do. That's where you should start. So one of the difficulties in a mixed group like this is you're going to have different purposes, different reasons. It's just accept that you're going to have more than a single purpose because you're in different types of organizations. Right? If you were in one organization, it would be easier to do. Similarly, when you get to the back, so go through the first three here, which is step one, purpose, what to do, how to do it. Then flip it over and deal with the resistance and challenges. And what we'd like you to do is score resistance and challenges, as well as to document why there's resistance to challenge and how you might overcome it. And how you might overcome it gets to some of the issues of what opportunities come to you. Okay? So, again, you can imagine a mixed group doing the challenges of resistance can be difficult too, because let's say one of you has unions in your jurisdiction, another don't. So one of you may have a score of zero, another one there may be major issues that could be at 10. But just, again, work that through your groups and just compromise. And opening up that may be an average.
Okay.
Yeah.
No seven.
For those of us who are in an academic setting, what we really are working with health departments, can we put ourselves as our organization being that health department to address these, and will it screw up your project?
No. If you wish to, that's fine. Or if you wish to, as you know, your own academic institution, you can do that too. Either way, I could frankly think about a lot of these issues in academia, which you may not want to. So either way, it won't last enough. What really the whole purpose of this is to help us think about this and to think about how we might actually go home and use this within our own organization, having a little bit of an opportunity to talk amongst peers, colleagues, which is helpful, and then it also can help you see that maybe this could work, maybe it couldn't work. So whatever hat you wish to wear, and also I know people in here wear multiple hats as well. You're both state interested. Okay. Is it relatively clear, folks? So these three rows, core competencies and job description, these two rows, competencies and job description, these two rows, recruitment retention. I would give you about 20 minutes to... 20 minutes, Jack?
20, yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm just being very negative in the setting. These things are so you can if you go into this process, you just have to and the leadership change and all the externalities
university has like half a dozen and we all kind of basically they can connect to this find a all this was going to be a sign that was going to be all the labs and all of
Yes. Whoops. I don't know.
Well, the university was
critical area.
So what we're doing now is we're going to quickly towards southern New Jersey. I was wondering if you see this.
You mean, oh, they didn't close the nest yet for a
That's right.
But you know, it's interesting. Some of these people, I guess, those people.
We actually have 11, 1, 2, 3.
But that's a way in. I'm in the higher education in West Virginia. That's going to be heavy wits.
Right.
Bring everything back. My wife said they already lost the power.
So the whole house, or just
the whole house? One of my neighbors, when he first got it, came over to me and had paper. What are you doing? Go figure out the east entrance.
I guess the storm winter was a good thing.
Well, the other thing is, people are going to watch out.
We had a
I'm going to take up my stuff in one way because I don't think I'm going to be able to do it.
if you haven't gotten past the purpose, what to do, and how to do, we suggest you start, you flip over shortly, otherwise we'll run out of time, you won't get to the other side. Yes, I'd like you to flip.
Okay.
I said it was exercise.
Okay. John?
The answer is no.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Seven.
Well, prior to what is the cost?
At this point in the day, I'll wade into the group and straighten them out.
Okay, you guys ready to wrap?
No.
Thank you. Okay, 5 minutes is up.
Okay, we gave you guys for 5 minutes. Were you able to use it well? Oh, good. And what's the difference between a button and a hammer? Okay. You average it. Oh, right.
Okay.
You've done enough. Okay. All right, which group would like to start reporting back? Oh, come on.
Don't all jump up.
Who'd like to start? All right. Which group would like to report? All right, thank you.
So what do you want us to say?
Your name, rank, and service.
Okay,
all right.
Well, we have the integrating core competence into job description. And we thought that the purpose would be to assure workers that essential competencies to their job, that the purpose would also help in making recruitment easier because applicants would really get what we were looking for. If our job descriptions are with a lot of clarity, they would be positive because they would be very measurable. You could even get better interview questions out of it because we have those competencies very clear and clearly described. Would add functionality to the job description. Would help us prioritize resumes when we're recruiting and we have 100 applications we have to sift through, and we could kind of pick out which of those applications had a nice match with our competency requirements. And if we have a clear description and job description of what our organization wants for workers, it will allow the organization as a whole to identify overall competency gaps between certain job descriptions and actually staffing patterns within the organization. So we talked about what we would do, and it's certainly that we would look at our current job descriptions and change them to include competencies. We would engage staff and having them talk with us about what they think the competencies for the jobs that they're doing, and assess what our organization wants to do, and adjust existing job descriptions to match the actual duties that are present. How to do it, definitely we felt we needed a staff engagement component because if they didn't buy into this, they could perceive it as being somewhat threatening, and we would have to make a thorough review and assessment of the current job descriptions, include your HR department if necessary, and kind of some approach where you're prioritizing which job descriptions you're going to do first, like in the third and fourth. Some of our barriers are starting up with 32 on the challenges and resistance. We thought budget was probably the least of our issues, as well as our organization and policymaker buy-in to accreditation. So those were one. We had a zero with external resources, a 10 with change, and some potential issues with legal and other organizational issues.
Great, thank you. And your group, I remember, had a good question, which was when you were moving from this part to challenges and resistance, the question was, is it dealing with integrating core competencies in job descriptions, or is it specific to our what and how? And we talked about it specific to what you've chosen as the what and how, because once you've identified what you want to do and how, what's the challenges and resistance, and you might have modified the what and the how. So I was glad you asked that question. Okay, whoops. Going the wrong way. Who's second? Well, we'll stay on competencies. to this group here. Who's reporting for this group?
Apparently I am.
Okay, Kathleen.
Bear with me here.
Speak up.
Okay. And you guys can jump in here. I think we had a lot of the same things for purposes. We had the idea of ensuring that the job description actually details the skills needed for the position. It could be useful in performance evaluation purposes. It can be used as a hiring tool when you're looking at recruiting staff. Also in terms of setting salary guidelines and looking at career progression for people within your organization. We talked about it in terms of training and how if you have clear job descriptions, the people who will be training those people have a better idea of what is expected or what they could do to help train the workforce. And we talked about it as part of a practical way to ensure that you have the personnel with the competencies needed to carry out your organization's strategic plan. The what to do and the how to do, we kind of combined a little bit and moved back and forth. But essentially, our what to do boiled down to rewrite the job description. And we had some steps that I think, again, were very similar, talking about like, getting feedback from the people that were currently in the job, as well as supervisors, employees, employers, identifying what competencies are required, consulting with HR. We kind of paused at that point because we got told we were short on time and went to the other side.
But your group asked for 5 minutes, and we ultimately gave it to you.
Yeah, we used it to fill out the other side. See? So we ended up with a score of 22, but our factors were slightly different. We ranked budget as our biggest obstacle in terms of, we gave it a 10 in terms of looking at if there are significant changes to job descriptions that could impact what people get paid. As well as the time and the resources you have to invest in the process to do this. Change and union both received 5. Change started out at 15, but we stepped amongst ourselves and got it down to a 5. In terms of, you know, people can feel threatened if you're changing their job description. But we also talked about ways to decrease that level of threat by keeping people involved in the process of changing job descriptions if that happens. We gave external resources and legal both 1, because we said we could need some external help to facilitate this process. And legal issues could come up depending on whether the HR is external to the health department or not, and whether how much control you had over your own job description. And we gave capacity and buy-in 0s to end up with 22.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. So we've heard from the two very competent groups. The third competent group is going to talk about recruitment and retention, right? So who's reporting from your group? Okay, good. I asked this group earlier who was going to be reporting, and they said they determined who's not going to be reporting. Thank you, Melissa.
We're looking at more just adequate job descriptions and making sure that they, you know, were detailed and provided the right information in terms of finding out the right people. And then one of the big things was just more succession planning and then developing emerging leaders. And that would be one of the primary words, the primary ways to recruit and retain, because that was in that process. And so in terms of how to do it, we do it. Advisory groups are always useful to have multidisciplinary advisory groups, and then having people from different organizations, academia, practice, and really being able to share that information so you'll know when, say, a fellowship has, so you can promote fellowships or make sure that programs are well rounded and kind of reach the right folks, and that it makes sure it's advertised to the right people. Because sometimes there are great programs out there that no one's aware of. So And then also, what was important was just forming academic health departments or just collaborations with between practice and academia. Those, that's really important for people to see. Letting them just, sometimes a lot of students, even from side of the school, that we know about the state local and state public health and the opportunities that are there. Sometimes they just don't know. So making those collaborations are important, and that will also go to pipeline. And then also it's just important to do a gap analysis to just really be clear of what your needs are, and that's from the perspective of the state or local health department. Letting them really know what do you need and where are we, and then that will help you kind of figure out the strategies that you need to. So for us, for unions, we gave that a 5 moderate, just basically because we felt that depending on the state, or we were kind of out with the mix with some local health department representation and then also academia. So we're kind of looking at it from 2 different views. So unions are sometimes being academia as well as some state local health departments, which varies. And so, yeah, that a 5 for moderate in terms of their influence, and it might be a challenge. And then for budget, we gave that a 10, that's major, just for budget crisis that are going throughout, you know, state and local government, that sometimes that's the first thing, well, that is the first thing cut, that trimming budgets and stuff like that. So it's very hard to retain, you know, the money to actually keep people hired or giving them buyouts to leave early and to retire. For change, we gave that a 1, that was minimal, and we felt like with the recruitment and retention, that at least the end user, let's say the person that works in the health department or health agency, they would like to have their skills strengthened and improved. So we felt that there wouldn't be a lot of resistance to that, to having that kind of change. And then for capacity, we gave it a 5 for moderate. And that's just more of, do the different places have the capacity and the number to actually implement training programs, actually recruit immigrants, and just reach out to people, and sometimes that's an issue. And then for external resources, we gave that a 1. We felt like there wouldn't be that much resistance to that, but only in terms of finding external resources if you're in rural areas. And that would be the hardest problem in your rural areas. It might be hard to find those external resources to really help with your attention. And then for policymaker guidance, that's what First Nation was. So we gave that
between one and five.
We did 4. So, and that was just more of, you know, just for the different, when you look at the, like, power legislation, or different things, like loan payment programs and stuff like that, sometimes it's just hard when you're being tight budget time to actually find the funding to implement on that national and federal level recruitment program. And so for legal, we gave it 0, other 0, and our total was 27.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for each of the groups. Again, difficult to do across groups. Yes. but hopefully you could see some value in these types of discussions and imagine using it within an organization. Just real briefly, when we did this at NALVO, we only had 3 this time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But thank you. When we did this at NALVO budget, and union issues on recruitment and retention came up pretty high with them. And you can think about it from the governance standpoint, those were key considerations. When we did this at NACHO, a change emerged that didn't really come up with the NALVO group. And again, you could think that the governing body typically isn't dealing with the internal change issues within the organization. So it's just interesting to see those results. Next step, you know, we'd suggest trying it within your own organization if you're so inclined. Try using it with other FAB standards. The same process, the same T matrix can be used doesn't have to be just workforce development. You could get that middle column and do other FAB standards or other issues you might have within your organization. Provide us with your feedback and suggestions. We really could use that. I have my email address up there as well. We'd love to hear from you. As we mentioned before, there we have the sign-up sheet if you want the results. Oh, please give us the results. Otherwise, Jack will tell me I can't work here anymore. We have a variety of resources, again, on the back of this sheet. But again, if we send it to you electronically, you'll end up with those links that you can just click and go. And Jack?
One thing somebody asked what we could do with the benefits or the strengths in the organization, you could just change this T to an X and put benefits and strengths over here. And then you could look at how would those benefits and strengths assist the implementation, but also how would they reduce or minimize the challenges and resistance. So you could add those, you could add on that other piece and go from a T matrix to an X.
Right. So something we'll consider constructing.
Ron, have you had any health departments actually use this tool and submit it as part of its documentation?
Not yet. And we will be, the Maryland Department of Health will probably be using it, but not until after their legislative session. It's probably April or May. We'll be going through that with them. And we'll see how that goes. We've had a number of organizations say that they're going to go back and use it, but we haven't. Often we don't get the feedback once people use it. Every so often I'll be in a meeting and find out. I'll say, can you send that to us? Can you put it up on the website and tell us what it is and how it works? But if any of you use it, we really would like you to be in contact with us.
So what do we do when we have a score?
What do you do when you have a score?
Well, I'll tell you where to focus, where the biggest resistance in
it. The aggregate score is less important than the scores across the rows and down the columns. So if, for instance, legal issues are high for everything, then it says, for all of your strategies, you need to pause and maybe get the Attorney General office in for the conversation to see how you can overcome some of the legal issues. Similarly, if resistance is really high for a particular strategy, if you have all 10s, that's going to suggest to you that you need to go back and revisit the strategy itself. So really, the column, down the columns and the rows, those scores are quite relevant. Something we didn't say at the beginning. So the aggregate scores are important also to know about the block of resistance and challenges. So again, I think it's more important for the pros and the cons. Does that help? Maybe. Okay. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Can you give me the sheets?